musculoskeletal and immunology. If anybody's really paying attention to their little thing that I gave you, you've hurt my feelings.
What thing?
The schedule of what we're discussing each week. I flipped the musculoskeletal and immunology. So not that it, I mean, you're still going to have, we'll get both covered. So, but I just, you know, I'm basically, I want to start with musculoskeletal or the bones, okay? So in this part, you know, basically you're talking about fractures, repair of fractures, and total joint and total knee replacement, and muscle and tendon and ligament repairs and those kinds of things, and treating patients with that. So that's kind of what we're talking about here. Okay? So, I want to talk about assessing the musculoskeletal system. And basically, it's the bones.
Them bones.
I can't remember that song or I'd sing it to you. I'm sorry. But, and then you'd be sorry if I was singing it to you. Okay? All right. Basic structure and function of the musculoskeletal system. What does it do?
Protection.
Supports. We'd look kind of silly if we didn't have our bone structure. We'd look like this little amoeba running around, crawling around, whatever. Protects vital organs. It facilitates mobility and movement, etc. Okay. It also helps the bone marrow. Helps with the production of red blood cells. Stores minerals, etc. Okay. This is just one that tells you how many bones you've got. At one time, I think in an anatomy and physiology class, I had to memorize them all.
Oh, and then parts of them, too. That was fun.
That's back
on
test for eating.
I can memorize.
And
give me 20 fossils.
Memorize
I'll memorize
and give
them.
It back to you. You've got long, short, flat, irregular bones. There's joints and muscles. Okay? Tendons and ligaments. Basically, that's what a bone looks like. That happens to be a long bone. Probably the femur, the way it looks. And the different portions of it. Okay? The different joints, it's a junction of two or more bones together. The synarthrous is immovable joints. So what's immovable in our immovable in our bodies?
Skull.
Okay. The amphiarthrosis is limited movement, and that would be what?
Like
that's our vertebrae.
Yeah.
We can't. Well, there are some people that can twist themselves up into all kinds of contortions, but. Probably the ones that we know the most are the diarthrosis, and those are your freely movable. Ball and socket, which is the hip and the shoulder. Hinge, elbow, knee, those are hinge joints. The saddle joint is at the base of the thumb. That's just a pivot is the radial or ulnar, where it pivots around. And gliding are the carpals of, like, the wrists. Okay? Hinge of the knee That's what it kind of looks like. You have cartilage and you have meniscus that are in between here. And we talk about the cartilage being destroyed or the meniscus being torn in knees. For the most part, cartilage and meniscus are pretty well avascular. So I mean avascular by what?
Doesn't have muscles.
Huh?
No blood flow?
No blood flow. So for the most part, they're very difficult to, I mean, you usually don't try and repair a medial meniscus or a meniscus or the cartilage, you take it out. Because it's just about as easy, even though it serves the purpose of cushioning, etc. Ligaments are the same and tendons are the same. They take a long time to heal because they do not have good blood flow. So the other part of the bone that a lot of times they is the femoral neck head on the hip bone. It's very avascular, and so if that is where the break is in the femoral neck, a lot of times they remove it and then they replace it with a prosthesis. Okay, and they do like what they consider a hemiarthroplasty or just a half total joint. They don't do the acetabulum part. Okay, so the synovium helps to keep it fluid, etc. Synovium is usually what starts to be destroyed when you have arthritis and rheumatoid arthritis. That it becomes more solidified, etc. Okay? Muscles attach to the bones and other are attached to the bones and other structures by tendons. So a lot of times when people have deep cuts in their hands or their wrist or whatever, they're looking to see if they cut a tendon. And if they cut a tendon, then a lot of times they can't move their fingers or their hands. And so they have to go in and they have to look and see and repair the tendon. So you can still have movement, etc. Muscles help with the contraction and movement. As everybody knows, muscle fibers react to electrical stimuli. Has anybody had one of those electrical stimuli tests? They're not real pleasant, but they'll make your little... Okay, so that's, muscles, also help basically with how we look, etc. Looks kind of, I think we'd look kind of bad if we were just skin and bones, typically. Different terms, The first couple are the different bone tissues. Cancellous is more of a lattice work. Cortical is more tightly bound. Diaphysis and epiphysis are the in the shafts of the long bone and the end of the long bone. Cartilage we just talked about. It's in between the bones and it kind of cushions. The periosteum is tissue that covers the bone. So you've got a real thin tissue over the bone that covers it. Endostem is at the end of the bone. You have joint capsules that the joints actually fit into. Ligaments, we already talked about, they help with in between the muscle in between the bones, okay. Synovium, again, we just talked about, is fluid in between the joints, helps keep them lubricated, etc. And the bursa is a sac that has fluid in it also. Brachitis is when that becomes inflamed, Hertz maybe keeps you from moving your joints, etc., as well as you could or would want to. Okay? This is just the bone cells, just gives you a definition of the different bone cells that you have and for the formation. I think this one talks about formation and it goes along with the healing of the bones and the different things that you need for formation and maintenance. So stress and weight bearing, people, you know, when we talk about osteoporosis and keeping your bones strong, weight bearing exercises are good. So walking and cetera, you need the vitamin D with calcium, etc. Okay, when do you need to start working on your bones so that you make sure that you keep them in good shape? Yeah, right now. Don't wait till you get to be my age. It's getting a little late. Who's more prone to osteoporosis?
Women.
And what else about women? Postmenopausal, right? What else?
Inactive.
Also bone structure. These little petite people. There's one good reason why we want to be hefty and strong. Got strong bones, okay? And you've got to think about getting your calcium, etc. Okay? Bone healing, that just goes through the different stages of bone healing. Basically, for your information, assessing includes questioning the person as far as if they're able to do their activities of daily living. Can they dress themselves? Can they take a shower or whatever? What's their health history, family history, etc.? Makes a big difference. Do they have osteoarthritis or rheumatoid arthritis in the family? Those are you know, it's a generational type thing. My mother has osteoarthritis. I have the same thing. My sisters do. So I'm looking forward to a joint replacement someday. I don't know when. But I'm looking forward to it. Okay? So occupation can make a big difference as far as some of the things that osteoarthritis, etc. People who are athletes, wear and tear can be very potentially start with arthritis. There are very few football players, professional or whatever, that don't have trouble with their joints now because they've had so much stress, etc., put on them. So those are things that you have to think about. Socioeconomic factors and medications, over-the-counter, etc. People who have, people who take, I'm trying to think of, the medications for GERD,
Prilosec,
etc., can also, that can affect the bone structure, etc. So there's a lot of medications that can affect that, your bone structure, and can take things away. Assessing for pain, altered sensation, people with low back pain or ruptured discs can actually have nerve deficits because it pinches the nerves, etc., in the neck as well as the low back pain. cetera. Posture and gait. Have you ever been to the doctor where he's asked you to walk across the hallway or whatever, or bend over because you're looking for
scoliosis,
et cetera.
We had a duck walk in our underwear for the Army across the room.
Duck walk.
They lined up whoever was at Bev's getting your physical, and you're all in your underwear, and you duck walked across the room, and they watched you.
Well, all righty. Very good. Bone integrity, your gait, etc. My husband accuses me of walking like my mother when I get up because I limp for a while until I get going in the night. I think I go pretty well, but then I hear people say, oh, you're limping. Why are you limping? Well, because. Just because. So those are the physical things that you're looking for. There's a nice picture of, there's scoliosis on the far right, lordosis, and then the kyphosis.
What's lordosis? That's your
toddler belly. Yeah. When you shoot that little pelvic bone right out. Older people, you know, I have two neighbors that I walk with. They're a little older than I am. Well, they are older than I am. But I keep telling them that when they're walking, they need to stand up straight, you know, because they walk like this. And I'm going, guys, you're going to be like that. So I've actually talked one of the ladies into walking a little bit straighter up, et cetera. But, you know, you need to stand up tall, get those shoulders back, et cetera. Okay? But older people will have the hump back. Detecting fluid in the knee, that's just kind of giving you a nice picture of how the doctor will take a look and see whether you've got fluid in the knee, moving the kneecap back and forth, and et cetera. Anybody had fluid taken off their knee or off of any of their joints? It can be a little bit on the painful side, but it's relief because it's almost more painful to have the fluid there. Okay, there's a typical rheumatoid arthritis, hands and joints. I had a great aunt who had horribly deformed hands, and she had it since the age of 25.
Wow.
So rheumatoid arthritis can strike at any age. You have children who can have rheumatoid arthritis. Yes, George?
Is that one hand or two different people?
It's probably one hand.
So you can have it in one hand and not the other?
Yeah.
Okay.
It can.
Okay.
But for the most part, they're usually
okay.
The same. The diagnostic tests that you're going to have to deal, x-rays are probably the prime thing you're going to do to diagnose any kind of fractures, any changes, etc. They'll do a CT scan, MRIs, and arthrography is when they're doing, they're looking into the joints. And they may put dye into the joints. They'll do a bone density test. That usually is done on especially older women over the age of 50. And it's just to basically see how dense their bones are and do they need to take extra calcium, etc. Bone scans are done. Typically, bone scan is done on Somebody usually that has a diagnosis of cancer, and they're looking to make sure that it hasn't gone to the bone. So they'll do bone scans quite often for those things. Arthroscopy is the same as any oscopy, well, I shouldn't say as the same, but arthro means it's looking into the joint. Pretty much they can do an arthroscopy on just about any joint that you have nowadays. Started out with knees, they can do hips, they can do ankles, wrist. So, and basically it's just looking inside to diagnose and see if there's a problem. When we first started doing arthroscopies, it was just a diagnostic thing. Now they're doing meniscectomies, so they're taking out the meniscus. They can do ligament repairs of the knee, anterior cruciate ligament repairs through an arthroscopy, etc. So the thing is, with the arthroscopy, they're looking in with a scope, and they have to put fluid into the joint to make it bigger so that they can see, and it's up on a camera, etc. Arthrocentesis, basically, centesis means you're taking fluid off the joint. It's the same as a paracentesis when you're taking fluid out of the abdominal cavity. It's the same as a thoracentesis when you're taking it out of the thoracic cavity. So it does, you know, when you get the centesis, you got to put whatever it's in front of it, and that's the area that you're taking the fluid off of. Okay? Electromyography is, that's when they're looking, they do these on patients who have carpal tunnel syndrome. Have you guys heard of that?
Mm-hmm.
Where it's actually, it occurs very often. People who use computers all the time, my husband who's a carpenter and he's used the same kind of movement on his hands with a hammer, etc. But it's where there's a nerve that runs through the carpal tunnel area, and they have to free that up. Well, one of the things that they do is they put electrical, they push electrical things to see the movement of the hands and to see if there's nerve damage. Okay. Biopsies, they can do bone biopsies for cancer. They also do muscle biopsies for like muscular dystrophy and those type of diseases. So the thing with a bone biopsy, they usually have to take, and it has to be put between two clamps so it's held apart. And then it has to be taken down to the laboratory very carefully, etc. Laboratory studies basically are your blood work and urine, looking for like calcium and etc. So alkaline phosphatase and those different tests for bone healing, etc. Okay? Musculoskeletal care modalities. We're going to run through this fairly quickly. Cast. How many people have had a cast on them?
Nope.
Hard or soft cast? Both?
French basted.
Huh? Okay.
Space boot.
That's what I had to do. Oh, yeah. Actually, they've done boots. I mean, like my grandson broke his ankle this fall, and they never put him in a cast. They put him in a boot.
I broke my fibula, and I was in a boot.
So, you know, it putting people in a hard cast is not always. Plaster or synthetic? Did you have plaster or synthetic cast?
Plaster.
Okay. Anybody had a synthetic cast?
What's the difference?
Well, the plaster is
plaster. Like where they let it and they wrap it around.
Yeah, and it's white, and you can't get it wet.
Well, you can do different colors, though.
No, that's not. That's synthetic.
That's what I have.
The ones that are, if you've had one in the last 10 years, you've probably had synthetic as opposed to plaster. Plaster cast is actually is kind of like a plaster that you put on the wall, and you get wet, and it dries, etc. Your synthetic casts are, they used to say you could get them wet, and it wouldn't make any difference. If you get a plaster cast wet, it dissolves, basically. So you lose that ability. Plaster casts are heavier. The synthetic are much lighter. Yes, you can get all kinds of different colors now. But basically what a cast does is it immobilizes the fracture in between. So if I've got a fracture of my forearm, a cast needs to go and take care of my wrist and the elbow. So you have to put the cast on so that it's between the two joints, and that stabilizes the bone. Okay? And basically that's what you want to do for a cast. So people can have casts either before or after surgery. That's what a cast basically looks like. And those are different pressure sores or pressure areas. You have to be careful and put extra padding so that you don't get nerve damage underneath the cast, okay? Prior to the cast, you gotta explain what you're gonna do, why you're doing it, and cetera. Cast care, you wanna keep it dry, you don't wanna cover it with plastic. Usually want to elevate the extremity because that keeps swelling down, etc. Usually if it's your arm or cetera, you want to sling because you get tired of holding that cast up all the time. Hygiene, you got to keep it clean. You've got to make sure that you are not putting anything down it because your skin starts to itch underneath. Mm-hmm. And so taking a coat hanger and going...
Or a fly swatter.
Yeah, or a fly swatter. Not a good idea, because if you cause an abrasion, you have a wonderful place for bacteria to grow. Okay? Teaching, exercises, you can do exercises in that, just tightening the muscles and releasing. Sometimes the doctors will have you do that, and that will help with the atrophy that occurs if you wear a cast for a long period of time. Those of you who have had casts, when you took it off, was there a big difference between your arm? So that's the atrophy that occurs, or the wasting that occurs of the muscle just from not moving it. And it takes a while to bring it back, okay? You cushion the rough edges. The edges around, you want to cushion those sometimes with either tape or something so it won't cause a cut on your hand. Signs and symptoms that you need to report: persistent pain, swelling, loss of sensation, skin color and temperature, signs of infection or pressure areas. What kinds of things might there be for signs of infection of this, of a cast, underneath the cast? What's going to be one of the signs?
Smell.
It stinks. Might be red, swollen, etc. Usually it's about the first 24 hours after a cast is applied. You really need to watch and make sure that there isn't a lot of swelling, because basically if it swells too much, you can cut off the circulation, and people have lost limbs, okay, from casts that have not been taken care of and watched, okay? And there is a famous lawsuit that happened several years ago, here in Charleston, when Charleston Hospital was open. So it was before Sarah Bush. But there was a young man who was like 17, had a broken leg, he was in the hospital, he had a cast put on, and the nurse was doing checks on it and noticed that there was swelling in the feet. She couldn't get good blanching. It was cold to the touch. She called the doctor, and the doctor told her to elevate it and not worry about it, and it kept going on. And so what basically occurred was, by morning, when the doctor came in, he had gangrene setting in, and he lost his leg. So there was a big lawsuit about it. So you know, now there are protective things for us. Number one is, if you can't get a good response from a doctor and you think there's a problem, and this holds for any problem, okay? You have a supervisor usually that you can go to. And if that doesn't work, then you can go to, there's always an administrator on call. And if that doesn't work, you've got the CEO of the hospital, and then you've also got the medical staff, president or whoever, and these people can step in and actually force the doctor to come in. So those kinds of things. But it's really important to keep it, you know, you do neuro checks and check cast checks on anybody who has a fresh cast. A lot of times what they're doing, another thing that they're doing now that they didn't used to do, is if somebody broke their leg, they would put them in what they call a soft cast. So they would put them in this, well, we used to use cotton roll. And so you wrapped it in cotton roll, and then you put cling around it, and then you put an ace around it. You couldn't do any kind of weight bearing. But the soft, what quote unquote, the soft cast allowed for swelling. And then in about 72 hours, the swelling all goes down, and then they put on a cast. And the cast then is on for about 6 to 8 weeks, depending on how well they heal. Okay? So important things with nursing is you're keeping an eye on that extremity, because you certainly don't want to cause further trouble. Okay? And what they can do is they can actually split the cast if they have to. They can make a window so that it can breathe. But a lot of times they'll just split the cast, wrap it a little bit with some ACE bandage, and then wait for the swelling to go down, and then, you know, put on a new cast. Okay. Usually in about 4 or 6 weeks, they come in and they get another x-ray to make sure that they're healing properly. Okay, splints and braces, we're doing a lot of those now, where we use the feet, the boots and braces to stabilize fractures instead of putting on a cast for the period of time. And a lot of it just depends on what kind of fracture it is, etc. Okay? Again, these are the nursing process as far as what you're going to do prior to putting on a cast or using a brace or a splint. The nursing diagnoses, that go along with that, compartment syndrome, pressure ulcers, disuse syndrome, delayed union or non-union fractures is basically where the fracture did not heal at all, okay, or it didn't come together. That's a cross-section of a muscle, compartment syndrome, and etc. Okay. Major goals for treating people with CAS, and those are, you know, relief of pain, improved physical mobility, interventions, relieving pain. A lot of times, elevation is good. Broken bones hurt a lot. And so pain medication is important, but you got to be careful not to overdose the patient. So you need to be careful with that. If you're giving a lot of pain medication, what goes along with giving the pain medication that you have to watch for with patients?
Constipation.
What else?
Consciousness.
Respiratory
distress.
Okay, all of those things you've got to look at. And if they have unrelieved pain, you got to think about compartment syndrome. And compartment syndrome, sometimes they actually have to, you know, split the actual skin to allow it to basically... the swelling goes down, etc. Okay? Wound healing, you have to look at that, and etc. For external fixation devices, these are actually, it's better to show you a picture of it.
Oh my gosh.
These are used, and actually a couple of semesters ago I talked about it, and then there was a patient in the hospital with one, so everybody was tripping in to see this external fixative. But usually this is a major fracture where several pieces of whatever bone is fractured in different spots. And so what they can do is they put the pins in and then they hook on this device, and then they can basically they turn the screws until they get it aligned up properly.
That sounds
and
painful.
They
That sounds very painful.
But a lot of it helps in that if there's a lot of damage to the skin, etc., it helps to use an external fixator so that the skin area can then be healed to open and it's not enclosed into a cast or something of that nature. So they like to use it on complicated fractures and etc. And they're kind of interesting to put on and to use and
set a nurse person.
But I've seen sometimes I've even seen them where they've been completely circular. But it looks like an erector set almost.
Are those the same kind of things that they use in leg extension surgery?
Yeah. I think they have used that. Where they break the bone apart and they kind of hold it. It holds it there. Yeah. So it's like an external fixator. And then what they're hoping with the leg extension is then the bone will grow together. And then they keep it going until they get it to the point where they want it to be. Traction. Don't use a lot of traction anymore. Traction used to be a way that especially the long bones, like the femur, would, people who had femur fractures, they would be in traction for the length of time of healing, which is usually about 6 weeks. And in bed, basically without the inability to do a lot of moving, etc. In this day and age, they have perfected, what they call nails, but they're like rods that they can actually put down the middle of the long bones, like the femur bones, and it will stabilize it. It's a much better way of healing, and the patient can put can bear weight almost immediately on it.
My dad had that. He broke his back, and they had to screw the weights into his head to keep his back straight and put the tension on that. I was like a year old, so I don't remember. But
was it like cervical?
No, I don't think so. I don't know. He would love to talk about it. But they had to, because he still got the scars from it. So that's all I really know, is that they had it for when he broke his back. But he broke his back, his neck, and his sternum. So yeah.
And a lot of times the other thing, and no, we'll talk about it in neuro, they have a halo,
yeah, halo.
That they put four pins here and here, and then they have this big circle that it attaches onto, and it sits on their shoulders, and basically what it does is it keeps the neck completely straight and immobile until the neck fracture can heal.
He still got his turtle shell and confidence stuff from
Where you're gonna see, that's what attraction looks like. So they put pins on either side. Here's your fracture here, and so it's got to go up like this and out, and it basically pulls it apart, and then it lines it back up again.
It just seems so painful.
Well, actually, it's more painful not to have that apart, or not to have it aligned again. That's what's really painful. So, they will do this, and it takes, and there's a couple of things, there's a couple of pictures on that. Important stuff, guys, when you're working with people who are with traction, is there are weights that usually go over the end of the bed or go in the contraption for the skeletal. And you don't want those weights on the floor because they've lost their ability to hold it apart. The other problem is that patients will scoot down in bed all the time. So you have to scoot them back into position so the weights are off the floor. You don't want to take the weights off, so you got to be careful when you're scooting them back up again. So, because if they hit the floor, there's no longer any traction there. So you have to be real careful with that. Now, at one time there was a question on the ATI about how do you, take care of a patient with a traction. I don't know if it's on there anymore. But it was on how you get the patient back up in bed, and you just have to scoot them back up again. You never take off. I shouldn't say never, because I have occasionally taken off the weights and then put them back on again, but usually the doctor's the one that's going to take them off and pull them up in bed, etc. Okay? So you don't want to have the ropes or the weights obstructed in any way. The types of tractions, the ones that you're going to see the most are like a Buck's traction. Usually that's for patients who have broken their hip, and they've come in, they've broken their hip. They're usually older, so they may need to have what they call a workup before they can take them to surgery to fix their hip. And so they'll put them in Buck's traction for about 24 hours till they get them all ready for surgery, and meaning they've got to have a cardiac clearance, etc. So, you know, to make sure that they're healthy enough to have the surgery. So they put them in the Buck's traction in order to keep them pain-free, okay? Pelvic traction is another one. There's a Buck's traction, and you have to have the bars, etc. attached to the bed, and then it's pulling with the weights there. Okay. There's a rather complicated, elaborate traction setup. I don't think I've seen this in about 20 years. So, and I was shocked when at Sarah Bush they don't even have a traction room. I was surprised when I got up to the sixth floor at Covenant, and they actually have a traction room with all those bars and stuff where they can put traction on. Most of the time where I've seen the bars and tractions are on patients who are bed rest and they're large. And so they put a trapeze so they can actually help them move up in bed, etc. But that's a rather elaborate type of traction that's used there. So the next few are basically the things that you need to do for the traction and looking for nerves and the nerve damage, looking for skin problems. Sometimes the patients, if they'll have like pins that go through the top part above the fracture and then below the fracture, and that's how they pull it apart. And so those pins have to be watched, the skin has to be watched so that you don't get, I'm sorry, you don't get an infection there. You're going to watch for color. Again, DVTs are another problem that you can have because the patient's in bed for a long length of time. So what's the medication we're probably going to give the patient if they're in bed?
Heparin.
And what else?
Aspirin.
What else?
Coumadin, warfarin.
Huh? How about some Lovenox?
Yeah, a little mouth.
Can you do that too?
Sure.
Okay, good.
As long as the doctor orders.
Well, you would. So you're watching for circulation, etc., good back care, shifting positions, pneumatic compression hose, anticoagulant, trapeze to help, pin care, all those good things. Oh, I suppose that's not going to work. I think we're about done because I'm
about. Yeah, we should. It's perfect. 4:30. Yeah.
What?
We're done.
Oh, darn.
Perfect timing.
I think it's a sign.
For God's sakes.
Oh. Oh, you just.
What else is there on here? Before you get excited.
I'm recording the lecture. It's my mind.
Okay, guys. Pay attention for a moment. Just a moment. Okay? The next ones are basically the nursing process and the care that you're giving the patient that they're in traction. Okay? So you're going to look over those things because that's what we're going to be asking on the test.
Okay. Good deal.
All right.